Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of Healthspan Academy. I am your host, Craig Shearhart, here with my co-host, Kyle Freiberger. And our guest today is Danielle Henry, who is a certified osteopath, and she's also a registered massage therapist. She originally started her undergrad at University of Guelph and finished a kinesiology degree in 2011, and then went on to osteopathy, and then got her massage therapy cert in 2017. And she's been practicing osteo now for 3 years, kinesiology for 5 years. So she's got a really diverse background. We're looking forward to this chat. Danielle, thanks for joining us here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Sweet. Well, I want to start this chat a little bit with the discipline of osteopathy, because I know that's kind of like a black box to a lot of people. And I know it's rapidly changing. It's still kind of new. So this is kind of a loaded question, but let's start with your definition of osteopathy and your approach to the practice.
It's funny you say that. I know even my colleagues from school, we usually say, how do we say what we do?
Yeah, you're elevator pitch.
Osteo is very interesting. So when I have a patient come in, I just tell them, if you haven't seen osteo before, this is how it's going to be in my treatment. So we look at the whole body as one unit. So all systems interrelate and connect to one another. Mm-hmm. So we work on three major systems. Your musculoskeletal system, your visceral system, which is like your organs, and your cranial sacral system, which is your brain, spine, spinal cord, cranial bones, and the cerebrospinal fluid that flows between the two. And it's very similar to chiro physio massage in the fact that it's a manual therapy. Now my practice is fairly gentle. So depending where you are in the world, you'll get, like more of aggressive type treatment or more of a gentle treatment. Mine's more gentle. My whole hope is that I'm creating healing, for the body without causing it to go into a pain response. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of that's how I describe it.
Cool. So I guess the first step is getting into more of a parasympathetic state and kind of like letting this sympathetic state settle down. Have you noticed more challenge since the pandemic started? Are people just generally more kind of riled up and it's harder to get them into that parasympathetic state where you can actually start doing stuff to them?
Yes. It's actually pretty, pretty intense how much anxiety and sympathetic I've been seeing in my practice. A few things I take note of is when people come in is their energy. So how are they kind of running a little bit high, and are they unsettled, restless, that sort of thing? And then how their body feels. So if their body feels tense, that's usually a sign of sympathetic input. The biggest one for me that I look for, which people can even look in other people, is these two muscles here. When these are on really, really tight, that is increased sympathetic.
Is that the sternocleidomastoid?
Sternocleidomastoid, yeah.
Yeah. Turn up my little bit of anatomy knowledge coming through there. Cool. So that's obviously like, that's a challenge. I think like the rest of the world all takes one system and specializes it. Like I studied biomechanics and I know like mechanically how things kind of work. But like, if you ask me to tie that to like someone's kidney, I'm like out to lunch.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about your mentality going into seeing a person. Like what makes the light bulbs go off in terms of where you start? Like it's the first kind of signs. You talk about the neck. What are you looking for before you start working on somebody?
Yeah. So when someone comes in, I obviously get a health history from them first so that I understand what their kind of focus is, because that's the one thing in osteo is that it's so broad and there's so many connections that I like to kind of know what their main concern is. From there, that gives me an idea of what possible structures are going to be related to that. And then the next thing I do is have a good conversation with them about their symptoms, onset of injuries. And it's interesting. I find that patients will tell me, it just started out of nowhere. I have no idea why it started. And that to me kind of goes, okay, there's some underlying things here that are probably all connected. Then from there, I do a postural analysis. So I have someone stand, I look at them from all four sides. And I'm very vocal. I'm going to tell them everything I see, because I think being an outside to their body, they know what they feel, but I know what I see. And so when I can give them that information that either matches or doesn't, then that gets me more curious about what's happening in their body. Then after that, I take a look at their tissue. So I look and see like how their body's feeling. And I usually do a full head to toe analysis. The first thing I always check is, it's this technique called global listening, or general listening. And that is a very specific osteo, diagnostic tool.
Sure.
That we use to feel where things are really pulling in the body, the main source of dysfunction.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask kind of one more question, follow up with that, because it kind of got the, for me, like my biggest breakthroughs in kind of my own physiology was when I started on my breath work. And I know that obviously is one of the biggest tools to control your headspace. And that's like your dictator, right? Of the whole body. So, is that a red flag you tend to pay attention to if someone's got like shallow breathing or like that kind of stuff? And how does that impact where you take the treatment?
Yeah, that's actually one of my big areas I focus on with people, because it works through your whole system, especially your whole trunk mostly. Mm-hmm. What I find is, so I'll assess someone's pelvis first. Pelvis is your center of your gravity, your being. And so basically from there, I'll check muscles. Pelvic floor is a big one. And there is a pelvic floor diaphragm there. So I'm checking to see that the breathing is actually getting into the diaphragm. You'd be surprised how many people it doesn't. They just breathe up in their chest. From there, I check the respiratory diaphragm. So right at the bottom of the ribs. If the two match, I know that that's like a typical dysfunction. If they don't match, there's two different things happening. From there, I go up to the neck where the phrenic nerve comes from C345. And if there's dysfunction there, it's usually on the side where everything else is dysfunctioned. So if I see dysfunction at C345, it's stuck, doesn't want to move, hypertonicity in the muscles, that's going to impede the nerve function to the diaphragm, which then impedes the pelvic floor diaphragm. So yeah, that's quite a big connection for sure.
It's crazy how everything's connected. Awesome. Yeah, I'll pass you off to Kyle for a couple of questions.
Yeah. Hey, Danielle. I probably just kind of want to keep going down that path of assessing people. I know you. We were hanging out a couple of weeks ago with my girlfriend and yourself and your husband, and you were doing some kind of party tricks on us, and kind of gave me my first little. Intro to osteopathy or osteopath, and I wanted to kind of talk a little bit more about it, because I know we've in previous shows, we've talked a lot about sitting and the glutes and the, you know, the dysfunctions with the glutes. When you basically played a little party trick on us, can you kind of explain what you did to us, and then kind of common issues with the glutes, and then we're going to kind of switch into like a proactive, you know, what can people do?
For sure. So that's probably my favorite party trick. So basically what I do is I assess someone's pelvis. So basically someone stands and I'll take their pelvis and I wobble it. When I see one side is very loose, very unstable, okay, compared to the other side, that tells me two things. It tells me they put a lot of weight on their stability side, the side that's not wobbling. And then the side that is more lax, more loose, means that their strength in their muscles is not engaged. So there's probably a dysfunction where the nerve is being impeded to the muscle. So the muscle can fire all it wants, but it's not going to actually engage as well if the nerve is not getting there. And then the other piece to that, which is probably a bit more osteo, I would say, than other practices, is the ligament laxity. I see this a lot in women. We have tons of ligaments in our pelvis. And if the muscles aren't firing and the ligaments are loose, we get so much laxity there. And so that just throws off the center of gravity, the balance in your pelvis, which then is going to affect above and below that. So you'll see a lot of low back pain. You'll see a lot of like stiffness, compression in the spine, organs that'll kind of get stuck in certain positions because it's not, you know, flowing through your pelvis as well as it should be. So glutes have a major impact on the stability of the pelvis, support for the low back, and obviously the lower limbs, knee alignment, all of that. It's a pretty big one. I pretty much do glutes on every single person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then continuing on from there, like, you know, are the glutes just typically, you know, are they not firing because we're sitting and we're dormant so much? Or, you know, I know one of my daily habits that I've tried to implement is just like doing some sort of exercise that fires the glutes every day, like kettlebell swings, or, you know, make sure I'm like engaging those glutes. you know, being more conscious when I walk, even or getting up and sitting down. You know, is that kind of one of the issues, is that we're just not engaging our glutes enough? And then if so, like, what, you know, is there something that you would recommend to a patient that, I guess most of your patients have glute issues. So what would you kind of recommend
to them? Yeah. What I find is that, yeah, sitting is definitely a big one. Crossing your legs is a big one. So when people cross their legs, it impedes, it puts like a imbalance when you're sitting. So you're sitting with your legs crossed. So it affects your pelvic floor. I can usually tell. I'll usually say, do you cross your right leg over your left? And they say, yes. And I'm like, mm-hmm. And we're going to not do that anymore, which is a hard thing to change. So my step-by-step for that is cross your ankles. Literally, I'm sitting right now with my ankles crossed because I don't want to cross my legs. So it's not good for your pelvis. And it turns your glutes off. So it gets them into this stretch position and then compression that you're sitting on. And so your superior and inferior glute nerves just turn off. So sitting, yes, of course. And sitting also causes a lot of compression in your lumbar spine, so your lower spine. And so with that, it's just like a really bad dysfunction. It creates this flexion posture in our low back. And then our glutes end up not firing because they get kind of, like you said, turned off. And so then what I notice is when people start to move, their hips don't actually extend. So they kind of get stuck in like the tight hip flexors in the front, and their hips then don't extend through their back. I'm definitely one for that. So I know that all too well, but the sitting definitely is going to lengthen out and not fire your glutes. They're going to end up getting weak. So sitting's big, yeah. But also the proper walking. People don't do that either. So,
right. And then is there one thing that you can kind of be, aside from, I guess you mentioned crossing your legs or not crossing your legs, like,
yeah.
And that would kind of be your first step, like being more aware of that. Awesome. Actually, yeah. I wouldn't mind switching gears. I know another topic of that's dear to you is fertility, and something you've been working on more recently. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of another party trick that you seem to have, is that you can, you know, tell somebody they're pregnant before they're pregnant, or you can tell somebody they're going to have a girl or a boy, and you're kind of right more than you're wrong. And, I'll just kind of let you talk about it. And then I'll probably come up with some questions as we go, but you know, what prompted you to get into fertility, and how has that been progressing?
It is really big interest to me. I think it just started happening. So people just kept coming in and they're like, hey, I don't know if osteo can do this, but like, I've had 3 miscarriages. I'm like, okay, let me see what I can do. So that just became popular. And then I started to get word of mouth and people coming in. I also worked with a really great naturopath who specializes in fertility. So she also would refer patients to me for any sort of structural dysfunctions that was impeding their ability to conceive. And so pelvis is huge. Pelvis is the biggest thing. If you want a baby, you need to make that environment, you need to make it favorable. So structure of pelvis, muscles, ligaments, all of that need to be in balance. So that's always my go-to first. I assess 3 major areas with that though. So I assess obviously musculoskeletal, organ motility. So every organ has a certain motility. So if you think of your abdomen as a water balloon, and our organs are small water balloons in there suspended by little strings. Okay. And if organs aren't floating per se, how they're supposed to, that usually means there's a dysfunction in the organ or the tissue around the organ. And so if I see that, if I see a lot of like denseness in one side of your pelvis, I'm going to go, something's not working right there. And so I'll feel, especially over, ovary and, uterus motility, if those are restricted, I'm going, okay, what's going on here? Is there a fibroid in there? Is there some scar tissue? Is there a cyst? Those kinds of things. And then I'll work on freeing up that, restriction with like manual techniques. Then the next one would be hormonal components. So the hormonal component, if that's off, means that it can throw off a woman's cycle, which means that you're not going to ovulate when you're supposed to. You don't have the signs of ovulation. And so I do that from a few different areas. So I work on, the big one I do is from your brain. So hypothalamus and pituitary that release certain hormones that create the right release. ovaries as well, because that's where a lot of the hormones come in as well. And then blood flow. That's the biggest thing. If you have stagnancy in blood flow, you're not going to grow a baby. You might get pregnant, but if your blood flow to the uterus is not there, you may not hold. And so that's a really big one I find, especially in women over 35. It's a big, big one. So yeah, so I kind of take it from like a structural component, hormonal component, and organ component. And then obviously we can go into the whole stress, diet, exercise component as well, but that's sort of like the treatment that I do. So.
Awesome. And you can, a lot of times you can guess at what, whether they're going to have a boy or a girl, and like, is that a, is yeah. there a method to that, or is it just, yeah.
There's a method. So I learned this from my professor at school that between 10 and 12 weeks, the uterus will sort of pull one way or another. So what I find is that in the beginning, I can tell someone's pregnant because the uterus motility actually slows down. That's something I actually like figured out on my own. It wasn't really a like a scientific thing. I've been looking for stuff to support it. But basically between ovulation and like getting your period or not, if the uterus slows right down, the way I look at it is it's making a good connection, right? It's making good blood supply connection. And so I feel like a lack of movement, which is good. Then between 10 and 12 weeks of being pregnant, the uterus will pull superior and to the right. So up and to the right if it's a girl, and down and to the left if it's a boy. I have been wrong. Actually, yeah. I had one the other day that I have been wrong on, but for the most part, that's pretty accurate.
Oh, cool.
Interesting.
I got like one more question. Kind of, I guess this, it doesn't have to relate to you personally, but I just wanted to ask kind of more, from a longevity perspective, proactive health perspective, like, what are there any like devices that you favor or use personally, or any strategies that you would use personally for and that you would recommend to people just for longevity from everything that you've seen to be more proactive with your health? Mm-hmm. Do you have any?
I think for me, I'll just tell you personally kind of how I do it for me. Drink water. I'm not great at it, and it is key. Like, we are made of fluid, and when our fluid doesn't move, dysfunction starts and disease starts. So water is key. And then a variety of exercise is really key. So I feel like some people are like, I love weightlifting. I love cardio. I feel like all those different types of exercise are important for all different reasons. So I would say mobility, cardiovascular training, and strength training. And I try to like do that periodically. I actually map it to my cycle so that I'm doing it when it's most favorable for me. Mm-hmm. But that's more of like a, because I'm passionate about fertility. Yeah. But it's also based on energy as well. So like if that day your energy is low and you're feeling low, don't go and do 10K, you know, do some like light yoga or do some meditation, that kind of stuff. Those would be probably my biggest things. One thing device wise I'm looking at right now, I use it in my practice quite a bit. It's a dolphin. So I know it sounds weird, but it's this device that stimulates acupuncture points. So it kind of helps create that whole body perspective without actually using a needle. So if someone comes in and says, I'm constipated, I'm going to do all my mobility stuff, manual work on their organs. But I'm going to also do my dolphin protocol for constipation, which kind of relates to TCM, like traditional Chinese medicine components, and it usually works really great. So yeah,
very cool. And going back to drinking water, I have two questions. So drinking water, do you are you aware of like your hydration status? Do you make sure you like you have electrolytes in the water? Like, do you have any other recommendations on that? Cause I know, I had somebody asking me this yesterday, actually, the daily recommended intake could be, 6, 7, 8 liters, like some crazy amount, but are you really retaining it? Are you, are you getting the proper amount of electrolytes? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I think I've got two thoughts on that. I think right now with what they've been saying with water is like obviously drink when you're thirsty. Right. And always start your day with a glass of water because, and I would say like neutral, not cold, not hot, neutral, because your body has just woken up. Everything's been sleeping. It needs that like flush, that needs that like, okay, wake up slowly. So water before anything, even before coffee, which doesn't always work for me. Mm-hmm. But, and then the second thing I recommend, as long as you don't have like heartburn or acid issues, is lemon water. Lemon is huge for detoxifying your organs. So if there's like if they're heavy, they're not working well, you have kidney stones, you have like liver enzymes are high. It's just a natural way to detoxify that, like those organs and make them function better. And then I try to do about half my weight in ounces is how I do for water, which is, it's still a lot when you think about it. I don't know how well that works. But that's just something that I try to stick to just so that I am getting enough in.
Yeah, definitely an individual, need per person, yeah. But, awesome. Well, I appreciate all of the insights and I'll hand it back over to Craig.
Yeah. I want to circle back a little bit to the fertility thing, because this is fascinating to me. And especially, my partner and I have kind of like put it off for a while, but it's now like more on the radar. We're at least open to the idea of maybe having kids in the next few years. The first question I want to ask is, and I haven't like done much of a search on this, but I assume there's some kind of correlation from your general health to your fertility. Yes. Like do you think that's like safe to say that the better your mental health, better your physical health, better your general habits, that you're more likely to be fertile? Is that?
Yes, absolutely. 100%. I feel like, water, number one, get that in there. Decrease your stress in your life. If there's something that is bothering you, like listen to that and, find a way to manage that. I know for me, it's either like hard run so that I can like, clear my brain, or it's like a bath and like calming down kind of thing. So, those are like my stress things. And then an anti-inflammatory diet. That's huge for fertility because you're keeping your inflammation down. Mm-hmm. So I'll see a lot of women. I had one, oh my God, it was amazing. She comes in and she doesn't have a period, just doesn't get it. Like, okay, that's not very good. So she's been seeing a gynecologist and I was like, you know what? Let's just like decrease your exercise, clean up your diet. And within 3 months, she got a period. So it was like, great.
Wow.
That same cycle, she ovulated, which is like, okay, so your body wants to do this, which is great. Didn't get pregnant, second cycle, pregnant. So yeah, it was pretty great. So yeah, there's a lot of components to it, but definitely your general health, if it's good, you're sleeping well, water, good diet, you're gonna do better.
That's awesome. And I guess to snowball on that, and this may be a loaded question, but that for someone that has multiple issues, how do you help them decide what is the lowest hanging fruit? What should they focus on? If they're super stressed, if they're not exercising, if their nutrition's bad, if they're not getting enough water, like how do you talk someone through that in terms of how to get those habits back on track kind of one step at a time?
Yeah. So I, when I see stuff like that, I kind of say like, okay, so like I'm part of your journey. There's other support that you can also get to help you with your journey if you're ready for that. I think of it as when I look at someone's house. So say your body's a house and I see the shutter falling off, the plumbing getting, restricted, the bricks falling out. I go, ooh, the bricks are falling out and nothing else is going to work. So whatever I feel is the biggest musculoskeletal or organ pull. So back to that general listening technique, I start there. With my treatment. So I'll start that. So for that, it would be like the bricks need to be fixed first. Maybe the plumbing will start to work a bit better. Then the shutter will fall back in kind of thing. So I kind of look at it from that perspective. And then I usually give them on the first visit, I don't give them anything. I say, okay, you go home, drink lots of water today and let me know how you feel. Cause that's going to give me feedback on how their treatment actually went with me and where I need to go next. If I feel that it's going to take quite some time, I'm going to be honest with them. I'm very vocal about that and say like, look, we've got a lot of things going on here. It's okay. And like, I'm here to support you. And as things start to improve, we'll handle the next issue. I usually try to go with like, usually their main concern or the biggest thing I feel is going to help them.
Awesome. I like that analogy.
Yeah.
So kind of snowballing off of that, let's circle back to your own habits. And obviously this is kind of a loaded question, but you know, we know that mobility is good for us. You know, meditation is good for us, proper eating, nutrition, health. And it's kind of easy to get lost, especially in the middle of a pandemic. Yes. So in terms of your own priorities right now, mm-hmm. I'm assuming you're doing a bit of mix, but what is your top priority in own personal health right now and fitness? And what do your habits look like around that?
Yeah. So right now I'm really big into, actually for years, actually, I'm big into meal prepping. I have a very busy schedule. So I meal prep so that way, one, I'm saving money. Two, I'm eating healthy food. And I just make sure that it's stuff that was going to fit into my schedule. Like if I'm going to have a busy day, I need something that's quick, easy, full of nutrients. So what does that look like? I've now tailored that more recently to fitting my cycle as well. So certain foods that are better at certain times. So I've been doing that and I've actually been seeing quite a good benefit from that. So, and I've learned that through a bunch of the naturopaths that I've worked with and some research that I've done myself. And then my next thing is that I am trying to work out, you know, according to my cycle as well. So again, listen. So if like I'm tired and I can't do it, guess what? I can meditate and do 10 minutes of core. That's doable. I can do that. Mm-hmm. Or like a yin yoga, or if I'm feeling energized, I might do like a power yoga or a HIIT training. So I just kind of listen to that and again, match that according to my cycle. So, and it's been working really well. I think I had one day I went for like 30 minute run. I was like, this sucks. but it was hot. And I was like, okay, just get through it. You got it. And then go from there.
That's awesome. Yeah. Obviously we all have our days and I've struggled to sneak those 20 minute sessions in myself since the pandemic hit. That's great. We've kind of been, so obviously the pandemic's hit and we've been kind of locked indoors and I don't know, I've been reading a lot of audiobooks, podcasts and stuff. Has there been a reference that you come across over in the pandemic that's really stuck with you that you could kind of share with the audience?
Oh, gosh. Yes, from a fertility perspective and actually from Kyle, actually. So,
oh, cool.
The book is called Beyond the Pill. And it was funny. I heard it from Kyle first and then I went back to work and was like, hey, all my naturopaths that do hormones and fertility stuff. I'm like, you girls know this, right? They're like, oh yeah. It's like the go-to book. I'm like, okay, great. Wow. And so it's been awesome. So from that perspective and just with what I'm focusing on now, it's been really, really great. Another one that's really great is Wim Hof, which is like,
Iceman.
All your breathing. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which I find really fascinating because I think of it as like a, like from a structural perspective and like down to like your cellular level and your, you know, your matrix and all of that. And I think that that's just so fascinating.
Yeah. It's crazy how that some of his accomplishments are like definitely head scratchers.
You're like, how do we not know this? Right.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, so it was so great meeting you today, Danielle. I appreciate your time. How can people learn more from you?
So I have Instagram, so you can follow me there at @osteo_Danielle and you'll see, I just do content all the time. That's just my, cause I love it. Knowledge is power. And then you can also see me, at my clinic in Guelph, which is Natural Choice Medical Clinic, or I'm also in Port Elgin at Maple Shores, Health Center.
Awesome. Yeah. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. So thanks a lot for joining us today. Thanks for tuning in today, guys. And we'll see you next time on Healthspan Academy.